Good evening and welcome to Brandon House Live on Lindell TV and frankspeech.com. We're going to be joined tonight by Judge Napolitano. The judge is back in the house. Give me a wide shot. Will someone give me a wide shot? What is going on? Why are you standing there wagging your tail? Here. Is this what you're after? Look. Okay, I put it up here on my little table behind the desk along with all the other gazillion water bottles and she knows it's there. Well, here, go get it. All right, there you go. Now get back in your my pillow bed and lay down. She is a. You guys, any of you have a lab? Now you're gonna bring it back to me. Any of you have a lab that's obsessed with tennis balls? This dog is obsessed with them. But anyway, she does play. For those of you who email me, wonder if this dog ever gets out of the studio and gets any exercise. The answer is yes, she does. And she's gonna knock a bunch of cameras over. They're gonna be in big trouble with Logan. All right, joining me now is Judge Napolitano. Judge, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you, Brandon. And my little Chris was just here, but I had to put him in the next room because he loves to attack the lights that are illuminating my face.
What kind of dog is it, Judge?
He is half German Shepherd and half Beagle. He's a rescue dog. I've had him for about a year and a half. He's 2.5 years old.
Well, it sounds like my wife's mini schnauzer attacks the little thing that what do you call those things that move around? That what do you call them, Logan? The vacuum, I know, but those things that run around by themselves. Yeah, the robot vacuum. Thank you. The little schnauzer attacks it like it's, you know, some kind of rodent running through the house. So yeah, what would we do without our dogs?
Chris is very much a teenage boy. Let's put it that way.
Well, we love our pets. There's nothing wrong with that. So, yeah. Judge, before we get into some of your articles you've been writing, I did a show last night, and I quoted a report out of the Heritage Foundation, which is not a libertarian group per se, but then I quoted also a libertarian. And I think you probably lean a little more libertarian. I'm not a libertarian per se, but I agree with some of the some of the ideas and philosophies of some of the libertarians, and some areas I don't agree. But I have a lot of friends like you that are libertarians, and so I'm trying to bring it up here so I can find it. Last night I did one on the draft, and I quoted from this gentleman right here, Murray Rothbard for a New Liberty. Now, I'm not saying I agree with everything that Murray's ever put out, but I really enjoyed reading this about the draft. And the reason I brought this up, Judge, and not to put you on the spot because you didn't know I was going to discuss this, but the Selective Service on February 2nd, 2022, February 22nd, 2022, and March 23rd, they're out there tweeting about in the event of a draft. And then, of course, we had under President Obama, we had a commission put together that released a report in March of 2020. Now they're recommending the Selective Service now be required for women. And so all Congress has to do is put that into a piece of legislation and we're off to the races. But they also mentioned that they want young people to have to do so many hours of community service in elementary school and high school to get out of school. And it has to be a government-approved organization. It has to be a government-approved faith-based organization, which, of course, you know this is just... And by the way, when you go and you look at the AmeriCorps and FemaCorps it's tied back to on their own website, they're openly talking about making change agents. They openly talk about social justice. They talk about think locally and globally. I mean, it's a social justice, you know, we're going to send these kids through these programs. And you can't get... And they openly state it's going to apply to homeschoolers. It's going to apply to private schools. So this commission that was put together is recommending, and again, the report came out in March of 2020 to Congress, is not only saying, yeah, we think we should make the women sign up for Selective Service, but we should also make this community volunteerism, if you will, mandated volunteerism, apply to young people today, which I have a real issue with this and wrote about it in one of my books that came out in 2009, because this is not new, it's just gaining steam. And so... then we see this tweet by social services 3 times in about a month. And I'm wondering what is going on. Is there's talk of World War III? You got Biden telling the 82nd Airborne, you're about to see what Ukraine is like. So the White House tries to walk that back. And I'm thinking to myself, is a draft on the way? And I'm not interested in Logan being drafted into the military to go die for some country there's no national interest or anything else, particularly when our borders are standing wide open. But I guess I want to ask you, because you probably fall more to the libertarian camp. What say you? I agree with this guy. This is, the draft, I think, is enslavement. And his recommendation is, if you want to have a standing army, pay them. Pay them big dollars, and people will risk their life for those big dollars the same way firefighters do, the same way other people do. Use the free market system to stand up your army. Don't, rip people off the street and make them risk life and limb to go to a war somewhere. What are your thoughts?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. Murray Rothbard is the intellectual guru of all serious thinking libertarians in the United States today. He crystallized throughout his life the idea that the individual is sovereign and not the state. And the principle of libertarian theory, aside from the sovereignty of the individual, is the non-aggression principle. All aggression, actual and threatened, is illicit and inherently wrong, even aggression from the government. So when Murray Rothbard says that the draft is slavery, just about every libertarian in the land, in the world, will agree with him. I fully agree. In fact, the 13th Amendment prohibits slavery. Of course, we had the draft many times since the 13th Amendment, and unfortunately, it is still on the books. But look at what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. You have conscripts who've been lied to and are poorly trained and poorly equipped, but better equipped than those they are fighting who are not conscripts but are fighting for an idea and a cause, the country they believe in, and they're stymieing a substantially stronger and larger army. Conscripts don't work unless there's a moral cause behind what they're fighting for. And quite frankly, you own your body. The government doesn't own it. I fully agree with Professor Rothbard. If you want a good army, pay them. Theoretically, that's what we have now. I don't think we pay them well enough, but we do train them. They're large enough. They're strong enough to take on just about anybody. Now, as for what Biden wants to do, I've had two brilliant guys among many on my podcast, Judging Freedom, and you probably know both of them. One is the great Colonel Douglas McGregor, West Point, career military, speaks to the justness of war from a libertarian perspective. The other is the great Philip Giraldi, former CIA, who quit the CIA when he believed the American government was lying to its own people in order to justify the invasion of Iraq. They both said the same thing to me 2 weeks ago in two different episodes when I said, well, what do you think that Joe Biden really wants? And their answer, I don't know what Biden wants, but the globalists who are around him and who run the State Department and the intelligence community, they want, are you ready for this? Regime change in Moscow. So when I heard what old Joe said last week, and I thought, my goodness, these two guys are right. Biden and his inner circle have been talking about it. He was just indiscreet enough not to keep it to himself. Do they want a war? Yes, they want a war, because that will increase old Joe's approval ratings, and nothing else seems to be working for him. Do they want a war that is sufficient enough to replace Putin? Yes, they do. Is any of that moral or just? It's absolutely immoral and unjust. We have no national security interest in how the Russian people choose their president, and we have no national security interest into what the borders of Ukraine are.
I agree. I mean, and I think that parents should find themselves having to take their kids, in my case, Logan, who's a, integral part of my company, okay? And I'm supposed to replace, first of all, my son to go all die for some, hellhole overseas, number one. But number two, even if he wasn't my son, I'm supposed to take this brain trust and ship him to the government to go die for who, for what? For the military-industrial complex, the globalist? I mean, I sure hope, Judge, the parents and the fathers and the grandfathers get as ticked off as I am, because my audience has been commenting, get Brandon on the topic of the draft and his son, and he starts showing a side of his anger that we don't often see on television.
There is no public support for the draft right now. I mean, the Biden people would have to stage some sort of an event, a stunt, like FDR did with Pearl Harbor, like LBJ did with the Gulf of Tonkin, in order to change the minds of the American public on this. I mean, most people don't even know where Ukraine is. Okay, they produce a lot of wheat, and okay, the present government is pro-West. The government the CIA overthrew was either neutral or pro-Russia. The CIA overthrew them because they weren't pro-West enough. This is simply not worth dying for. In fact, Colonel McGregor argues it's not even worth sending military equipment to. By sending military equipment to Ukraine, the only result is more death and bloodshed before the inevitable Russian triumph.
So how convinced are you? We won't hold you to it. It's just your opinion tonight, as you see it. It's always changing. It's always fluid. What is the likelihood, Judge, that we have a World War III? I mean, I think it's already begun. I think it actually began before all this. I mean, when you've got China and Russia hacking on your power grid and other things like that, that's, as Dr. Price says, an act of war. At least it should be considered such. But what is, and we've got an economic war going, so we've got a lot already happening. But what is your likelihood this breaks into a hot World War III?
I think it's, I'm sorry to say, a high likelihood. All it takes is one Russian tank commander, so he's got 10 tanks under him, either to misread his GPS or intentionally to lob some missiles onto the Polish side of the border, where there are thousands of American troops and hundreds of millions in American equipment. And there you go.
I was reading an article today by, I don't know if you know who this gentleman is, Martin Armstrong.
I do.
And he was saying, you know, his concern is, what if there's a false flag? Because Biden has said, you know, if there's any kind of chemical, warfare used by Putin, well, then that's a red line. Well, and he was like, well, what if there's a false flag and someone does this and blames it on Russia, and boom, we're off to the races. So again, I guess what I'm saying, the same thing you are, is whether by mistake or by a false flag, we're just right on the edge.
It's terrifying. You know, Einstein was once asked, and he had quite a bit to do with the development of nuclear weapons, how will World War III be fought? He said, I don't know, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Meaning, wow. World War III will destroy the Earth because each side will continue to ratchet up its offensive weaponry until they reach the mass destruction that only Harry Truman unleashed.
Well, of course, Einstein would have known all about, you know, electromagnetic pulse and EMP and what that could do to put down your advanced and sophisticated military, leaving you with nothing but sticks and stones to fight with. Let's go to the website here. Logan, if you don't mind showing the screen, let's talk about a couple of your articles, Judge. You've just had come out at Judge Knapp, JUDGENAP.com, folks. It's on the screen there, JudgeKnapp.com. Military torturers at Guantanamo Bay. What's that article about, Judge? I read it, so these are questions to set up a good interview, because I know what it's about, but tell our audience what it's about.
Well, you know, I can actually advance that article to the article I wrote today, which doesn't come out until Thursday, because military judges at Guantanamo Bay have ruled that the defendants in their criminal trials can subpoena records of their torture and testify to their torture. Now the government doesn't want to have any trials. The most notorious person in Guantanamo Bay is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the self-admitted mastermind of 9/11 and the acknowledged mastermind of 9/11 by the United States government. Guess what his lawyers are doing with the prosecutors as we speak? Negotiating a plea agreement in order to avoid the death penalty, negotiating for creature comforts far beyond what anybody gets who's committed mass murder when they're incarcerated in an American federal prison. Why? Because if he sits in a public witness stand and tells the world what the CIA physically did to him, it will humiliate and embarrass the government, and the government doesn't want to endure that humiliation and embarrassment, so they're not going to try him. They're going to give him a free pass to life in prison, a man who orchestrated the death of 3,000 Americans, because George W. Bush imprudently authorized torture when it wasn't necessary, and he did so irrespective of the fact that it's a federal crime, and it destroyed the rule of law down there because they thought they could torture these guys and get away with it, and suddenly the court rulings are saying, well, whatever you did to them, they can tell the jury. So that's what that article is about. The second part of it comes out on Thursday, because everybody knows or should remember who Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is. He's been there for 20 years, and the trial is yet to start. And now the government says, we don't want to try him. We want to negotiate with you.
Is he the one they call the 20th hijacker?
No. No, he's the mastermind. That's an interesting question. There are two 20th hijackers. The government can't decide which one is actually the 20th hijacker, except that one of them is serving a life sentence in Florence, Colorado, for a crime he didn't commit, according to the jurors in his case. And the other one, who probably was the 20th hijacker, guess where he is? He's been released to Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
So the whole Gitmo is not only a devil's island, it's a destruction of the rule of law as we understand it, with innocent people being incarcerated and guilty people being set free. It's the Constitution turned on its head.
And is it in Cuba, the shores there of Cuba, because somehow the federal government thinks by doing it offshore, they're getting around federal law?
The government argued that Cuba is not the United States, and therefore the Constitution didn't apply and federal laws didn't apply and federal judges couldn't interfere with them. The Supreme Court rejected that and said wherever the government goes, the Constitution goes with it. Because all government power, licit and illicit, is exercised pursuant to the Constitution. And therefore, the Constitution does apply, federal laws do apply, and federal judges can rule on what happens there. It was a boneheaded move to try and create a devil's island off the coast of the United States. If they had followed the advice that many of us gave them at the time, it was this. 9/11 was a federal crime. Try these people in the federal courts where the crimes occurred. New York City, Washington, D.C., Shanksville, Pennsylvania. They'll either be acquitted or convicted. And then you can close Gitmo. Do you know what Gitmo costs a year for the 39 prisoners that are still there?
No,
none of whom has had a trial? $100 million a year.
Wow.
To Joe Biden's credit, and I rarely can credit anything he does or says, particularly of late, he, like his boss, Barack Obama, his former boss, has been trying very hard to close Gitmo. That might have something to do with the government deciding that it doesn't want to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It wants to get the hell out of there.
What about the torture? You're a judge. You're an attorney. How does the courts look at the admission of someone who is supposedly confessing to something under duress, under torture? Is that a legal confession?
No, it absolutely isn't. And there isn't a federal judge, civilian or military, in the country or in Cuba or anywhere who would admit evidence obtained under torture. So what the government did was have the CIA conduct the torture in a foreign country, thinking that it wasn't a crime there. It's a crime no matter where they do it. And then they sent these guys who had been tortured to Guantanamo Bay, and the FBI showed up. When the FBI showed up, the first thing they say with translators is, by the way, you don't have to talk to me, that's the law, and you're entitled to a lawyer. So as soon as they arrived at Guantanamo Bay, after the first FBI interview, they got lawyers and translators, and the lawyers started filing paperwork in Washington, D.C., which outlined the torture that was committed. And suddenly the government realized, we don't have cases. We have all this evidence, but it was obtained illegally. Maybe some military judge will admit it. Well, guess what? The military judges are faithful to the Constitution, just like civilian federal judges are. So the military judges said, you're not going to admit anything from torture in my courtroom. And the government was stuck. We haven't acquired this evidence by any lawful means. We only acquired it illegally, and we can't use illegally acquired evidence in a courtroom. What are we going to do? Negotiate, plea bargain. That's what we're stuck with now. What makes this newsworthy is that the mastermind of 9/11 will be the beneficiary of all this.
Wow. Let's look at your next article. CIA spies and their collaborators. Tell me about this one, please.
Well, when the CIA was established, it was 1947. We had just defeated the Nazis. The Nazis had a very, very extensive spying operation in all of Germany. Half of Germany was spying on the other half. The people usually spied on were enemies of the regime, the Jewish people, and other individuals who refused to cave to the Nazi totalitarianism and terror. And Harry Truman said, we need some sort of a spying operation here. So the National Security Act of 1947 established the CIA, which expressly says it can't spy in the United States, it can't spy on Americans, and it can't participate in American law enforcement. Senator Ron Wyden, again, a person with whom I don't always agree, a liberal Democrat from Oregon, who's terrific on civil liberties, exposed recently that the CIA is in competition with the NSA. The NSA is our domestic spies, whose charge is to spy on Americans, but now the CIA is doing it as well. So you were talking in the intro to your show about how pervasive surveillance is. It's more pervasive than you can imagine. Every keystroke on every desktop and every mobile device, even if you've deleted something, is captured by the federal government, either the CIA against its charter or the NSA against federal law and against the Constitution. The second largest building in the country is in Utah, and it's the federal government storage facility for all of the reels of tape that it has on everybody's that it spied on. It's 2 years old, and they're already running out of space.
And that's every phone call as well, right?
Well, it's every phone call. It's everything transmitted on fiber optic cable. So it's everything. It's everything in here. You know, every financial, legal, personal, medical, everything in here. Every phone call. Every keystroke. And of course, what the federal government does, the states and local governments will imitate. So New York City has its own way of capturing the same information, as do most cities and even many small towns, because the federal government's been giving away cash. Joe Biden wants to give away $37 billion to police, not to the civilian authorities that the police work for, but directly to the police so that they can buy the same toys that the federal government has. We live in a police state where the police are presumed correct and the laws are written to enhance order rather than to protect personal liberty.
I agree. And of course, at what point are we seeing people blackmailed? You know, we often look at what goes on in Washington and think, are these people bullied? Are they bought off? Are they blackmailed? And when you understand all the data collection, it would be easy to blackmail people, would it not?
Of course it would. Why is it that the budgets of the intelligence community keep expanding? Because they have a stranglehold on members of Congress, because they know everything that Congress is doing. Look, I've said this before in public, so I'm not speaking out of school. Before he died, the late Justice Scalia told me that he was certain that the court was being spied on by the NSA, that everything he said on the phone and in conference to his wife and to other justices and to friends like me, and everything the justices said in their texts and emails to each other was in the hands of the deep state of the intelligence community. It's totally over the top. Edward Snowden, in my view, is an American hero, and we wouldn't know 1% of this had he not spilled the beans as he did. The only person who ever attempted to resist this in the White House since 1947 was Donald Trump. And look at what the deep state did to him. They made his 4 years in the White House miserable and did everything they could, short of violence, to prevent him from undermining their unconstitutional, immoral, illegal surveillance on us. I had many conversations with him about this, about how, Judge, I know I promised I would show this, but if you'd seen what I'd seen, you'd know why I can't show it. Mr. President, this piece of legislation they want you to sign is the same mentality, the same culture as those who spied on you when you were a candidate and are probably spying on you even as we speak. Imagine a conversation like that with the President of the United States. That's what I had because it was all true. I wasn't telling him anything he didn't know. He just wanted to hear it from somebody he trusted who was outside the government.
And again, I don't want to pry too much, but my curiosity is up. When, you know, I think President Trump had mentioned releasing a lot more data on the assassination of JFK, who I personally
That's what I was alluding to. You know, you and I have a mutual friend, Roger Stone, who's written a lot about the JFK assassination. Roger theorizes quite plausibly, I think, that LBJ was behind it. And in fact, just the other day, 3 days ago, I don't know if you saw this, this fellow is now in his late 80s, was a steward on Air Force One on November 22nd, 1963. Who talked about all the whooping and hollering and celebrating on the way back and LBJ downing a half a bottle of scotch so that the steward had to come out and close a couple of doors so that the grieving Mrs. Kennedy couldn't hear it.
Oh,
anyway, President Trump promised Stone many times he would release the JFK files. And one time in one of my many conversations with him, I said, when are you going to do it? And that's when he said to me, Judge, if you saw what I saw, you'd know why I can't release it. Well, what the hell did they show him? Kennedy's brains blown out? I don't know. He wouldn't tell me, and I don't blame him for not telling me. But I'm, to this day, dying to know what it was.
Yeah, I am too. And that's what I, you know, natural curiosity, because I've told Roger it's kind of a hobby. It has been for 30-some-odd years to study the JFK assassination. And I think Roger Stone talking about LBJ, the mafia, the CIA, I think he comes very close to other things I've seen, watched, read, and I think he makes a very plausible case in his book. And so if I were president, I would say, bring me those files. I want to see this. I got, you know, here's my opportunity. I mean, I can only imagine what he saw that shook him to the core, right?
Right. And you know, it's probably not wise to speculate. You know, I've known him for almost 40 years. He is a very strong-willed person. I mean, that's the understatement of the age. And he rarely changes his mind. But someone or something changed his mind 180 degrees. And he's been talking about this since before he was ever running for president.
Right.
That if he ever had the opportunity, he would reveal these records.
Fascinating.
He had the opportunity and he didn't.
Wow, that's fascinating. Let me go to one or two more before we let you go, Judge. His website, judgeknapp.com. You can also find his podcast. Where can they find your podcast, Judge?
My best place to find my podcast, Judging Freedom, is on YouTube. So I do about 3 or 4 a day, usually an interview like you and I are doing now. And then I do a pop-ups, you know, as soon as a judge makes a ruling or a decision comes down by the Supreme Court, or there's some notorious indictment, anything in my end of the world, I sit right where I am now in front of my desktop and explain what it was, and then we post it. Some of the best interviews I've been having lately are with the contrarians, like Colonel McGregor and Phil Giraldi, who really open up people's eyes to what the government is after. I don't like to attack people. I like to attack and support ideas, but Tony Blinken, who's the current Secretary of State, is just a well-known globalist. This is nothing new. And to the extent that he is making foreign policy decisions because old Joe either can't grasp the issues or can't make up his mind, those decisions are all going to favor the globalist ideology, which is that America has the right to dislodge leaders of governments with which we disagree. This is crazy. We should be trading with Russia. We should be trading with the Ukraine. The Germans should have the right to buy all the gas they want from Russia. The sanctions are unconstitutional. The president is seizing and freezing people's property who have nothing to do with what Vladimir Putin is doing. He's interfering with the free flow of commercial intercourse in ways that are just reprehensible. So if I'm an importer of vodka in northern New Jersey and I wired $10 million to the manufacturer in Moscow and the vodka shows up in a shipping container at Port Newark, the feds are not going to let me take it. They're either going to seize it and destroy it or send it back. And what happens to that $10 million? I'll never see it. Again, this is just a theoretical hypothetical. I'm not in the business of importing vodka, but it's an interference with the free flow of commerce, which is protected from interference by the Constitution.
So how much of this, Judge, is laying the foundation and the acceptance for more that is to come? In other words, if you can seize the yachts of a bunch of oligarchs somehow tied back to Putin, but maybe not involved in his invasion of Ukraine, but if you start seizing their property and seizing their stuff, how is this not setting the global narrative that we can say, well, now we're going to start seizing the assets and the properties of the, quote, domestic terrorists, i.e. those that supported Donald Trump or for the Constitution or libertarians or Christians or whoever else they want to go after?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if that comes next. You know, there's two statutes that President Biden relies on. One is Jimmy Carter era, the economic emergency, the International Economic Emergency Act of 1977. And one is Obama era, the Magnitsky Act of 2016. And they both say, if the president declares you a human rights violator and you're a foreign person or entity, the president can freeze or seize your assets and prevent you from engaging in commercial intercourse. And if you want to challenge this, A, you have to come to the United States and submit to the jurisdiction of federal courts. Well, they're not going to do that any more than we would go to Russia and submit to the jurisdiction of a Russian court. That's insane. And B, you have to prove that you're not a human rights violator. Well, that's Alice in Wonderland. The defendant never has to prove anything. The government has to prove its case. These two statutes are profoundly unconstitutional. There's no emergency exception to the Constitution. If the government wants life, liberty, or property, it has to follow due process. That's the Fifth Amendment. Due process means a jury trial at which the government proves fault. They don't even know who owns these yachts that they're seizing.
Crazy. Two more issues. And again, folks, I hope you'll visit his website. There's a lot of articles there we're not going to have time to get to. JudgeKnapp.com. But two more, real quick. I saw there to where an FBI agent was, I guess he was indicted and had committed seven or eight felonies or whatever they classified them as. I think I read felonies. Related to the then governor of Missouri and an investigation into him, he goes into court and boom, the guy, he turns around and walks right out. You know, no probation. I guess they were going to put down probation, all kinds of stuff. And they just basically said, go on your merry way. And yet, apparently he was doing all kinds of things that would not allow the then governor of Missouri to defend himself. And he's having to come up against what this guy was doing as an FBI agent. I don't know if you followed that case or not. What is the average citizen to do when you find out that your government is so corrupt, the very people we thought we could trust are the ones that are lying and hiding evidence or making up stuff that could have you thrown in prison the rest of your life?
I don't know the case of which you speak. I've written 9 books on the Constitution. The first is called Constitutional Chaos, What Happens When the Government Breaks Its Own Laws. That book is 10 years old. I could write 3 more volumes. It's a chronicle of the type of thing that you're talking about, where the government will break laws in order to enforce laws. My favorite case is a federal judge being tried for bribery, where the prosecutors bribed a witness to testify against the federal judge. The jury bought it, he was convicted, and the appellate court overturned the conviction. The dirty little secret of law enforcement is that in every day, in every courthouse in America, the government gets away with breaking the law. Judges know it, defense lawyers know it, prosecutors know it, FBI agents know it, investigators know it, cops know it. Very, very few in the public know it. I'm not surprised at the tale you just told, but I have to tell you, I do not know of that specific case.
Well, let me make sure I get on the record the correct facts in case I misspoke them. Here they are from Western Journal. Ex-FBI agent amidst a wildly crooked action against Republican governor, but has punishment immediately suspended. This was last week, March 25th. A former FBI agent has admitted to entering false evidence in an investigation into a Republican leader, but despite this admission in court, his punishment was quickly waived. One day before jury selection was begun in a case to prosecute him for lying in his investigation into a sexual misconduct charge against then Missouri Governor Eric Greitens, former FBI agent William Tisabe pleaded guilty to one misdemeanor count of evidence tampering on Wednesday. The ex-corrupt FBI agent was about to be tried on six counts of perjury and one count of evidence tampering with an indictment that accused him of hiding evidence and lying during the investigation into this the then governor, who's now, by the way, running for U.S. Senate. The indictment steamed from a scandal unleashed, blah, blah, blah. Of course, I think he was looking at some time in prison, no doubt about it. But they go on to talk about how he just walked out. I mean, he just literally walked out of the courtroom. And you're like, what? Because if the average person were to do this.
My guess is that he gave them something that they couldn't get from some other source. Or he agreed to keep silent something that he knew that would embarrass the government. There has to be a quid pro quo there, particularly an FBI agent as to whom there are so many allegations of wrongdoing. There's obviously some evidence. They have a grand jury indictment. It sounds like there's even more than one indictment. So he either coughed up something they desperately wanted or agreed to keep silent something he had on them. That's the way the government works.
And then finally, Judge, President Biden has signed an executive order related to digital currencies, et cetera. If they start having digital currencies that are programmable, you want to talk about social credit scores merging with digital currencies, which they will be programmable. You know, you've spent your limit on meat this month. You've spent your limit on fossil fuels. You're a quote domestic terrorist, and you can't go four blocks outside this radius. And if you do, your digital currency is not going to work. So they can put you into a ghetto, if it were. How concerned are you as a civil libertarian about this?
Terribly concerned about it. I mean, high tech has liberated us to acquire all kinds of information and engage in spectacular communication. It has also given the government tools to destroy our freedom and to destroy our lives. Where would I go? Texas. State of Texas is minting its own gold and silver coins, which the Constitution lets it do. And there are many, many merchants who are accepting it. And the feds can't touch it, and they can't do a damn thing about it.
I know all about that. My friend Kevin Freeman is involved in that. So it's excellent.
I don't know Kevin, but God bless him.
Exactly right. JudgeKnapp.com, JudgeKnapp.com. Thank you for your time tonight and your excellent articles, Judge.
All the best, Brandon. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. Thank you, my friend.
You too. We'll get you back. Judge Napolitano checking in. Hope you visit his website and his great articles, JudgeKnapp.com, and find out about his podcast as well. You heard about some of the very interesting people he's been interviewing. You'll find all of it at JudgeKnapp.com.